Welcome to the What Even Is podcast, spooktacular. For the month of October, we'll be talking about all things mystical, magical, and just plain misunderstood, and maybe even a little spooky. I'm your host.
Sorry, I had something in my throat. I'm your host, Donna Trung. Let's get started. Today we're answering What Even Are Paranormal Investigators, Part 1, with our first guests, who are investigators from the Supernatural Paranormal Investigations Research Intuitive Truth Society, also known as Spirits of New England, Ellen McNeil and Jack Kenna. Ellen McNeil is the co-founder, lead investigator, and case manager of Spirits of New England and has appeared on Haunted Case Files and A Haunting. Jack Kenna is an investigator and tech specialist of Spirits of New England and has written the book Spirits of New England, Hauntings, Ghosts, and Demons. He has also written Paranormal Research Building a Strong Team and a comic book series, SPIRITS, The Forgotten Souls of Bay Path. He also appeared in Paranormal Survivor, Haunted Case Files, Haunted Hospitals, and A Haunting. So my first question is, what is a paranormal investigator?
Jack, you can start.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
You didn't answer that,
you're, huh? Yeah, you're cuter than me. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, we know as well as I do what we are. For us, we help people out. There's different type of paranormal investigators. For what we do, Spirits of New England, our focus is on trying to help people with hauntings in their home. That's our main focus. I work for the Department of the Army full-time. I'm an engineering technician. Ellen's retired now, but
I worked with cancer patients for 21 years.
Yeah. So we do all different things.
So how do you like help people? Like say if you actually find something, like how do you get rid of it?
It's not always that easy. First of all, just trying to find out if there's something there, it takes time. I mean, it doesn't take an hour or 2 hours. It can take sometimes, you know, days to try to figure it out, or months or weeks, or, you know, it just depends on the case. Every case is different. And a lot of times it also involves not just knowing how to get that energy out of the home or that spirit out of the home. I mean, there's ways to do that. There's things you do using prayer or different types of techniques. Sometimes we'll bring in a psychic medium that can work with the spirit to get them to move on. Or sometimes they won't move on. They won't leave, but you got to get them to come to terms with the people living there now so that they leave each other, basically leave each other alone. It's not always that easy either. It depends on the type of case you got and stuff like that. But a big part of it really is working with the people, because in most cases we find they have something in their background that's very negative, something happened to them, or maybe they were involved with drugs, or there was other terrible things that happened to them, and they've never dealt with those issues. So what you have is something negative maybe coming in that's interacting with them because of the negativity they're holding within themselves. So actually, you usually got to get them to seek out professional help to work through those issues and resolve their own problems that way, so they don't keep attracting all this type of negative energy to them, right? These negative things to them. That's true with your own life, right?
I mean,
you know, if you have a lot of issues, you have different things that happen to you, you can attract or go looking for negative other type of people because you think that's what you deserve when you really don't. So that's a big part of it. I mean, we're not psychiatrists or psychologists, but we have to talk to them about those problems and get them to work on resolving them on their own. That's a big part of what we tell people is you have to be an active participant in helping resolve your haunting. I mean, we can do some things on the spiritual end of things with the spirit or the energy that's there, but they have to work on themselves. And that's a big part of that. And before we even take a case, Ellen, tell them the form they have to fill out in order just to get us to go help them. We don't charge anything, right? We do this for free.
There's a lot of people that say, oh, my house is haunted. I need you to come out. Okay, what's going on? And I don't know. The house just feels creepy. Okay, what's going on? Well, you know, I hear stuff. Can you be a little more specific than that? So we came up with a very, very, very detailed form, because when we go on an investigation, we want to know everything we possibly can to help the client. We ask what kind of medications people are on. Are you near a cemetery? Has there been a terrible accident or something bad that happened in your life that could be just increasing your stress level. You know, we want to know about the house, the land, the people involved, what is occurring. Are there certain times that this happens, certain dates, certain anniversaries to things? You know, what is triggering this? What is triggering the activity? So if somebody takes the time to fill out this form, then we know that they're pretty serious about us coming out to help them. Some people just like to walk into a place blindly, which I understand. You don't want to have any preconceived ideas about the house. But on the other hand, you could miss something huge by not getting all the details. So different teams do things differently. I like the way we do stuff.
So have you guys found that? Because I know you said like it could be like the person. So like if they have like a lot of negativity in their lives, so then it's like them attracting like these spirits to them, basically. So these spirits are attaching to the person.
Yeah. I mean, if the person is negative and feels weak, if there's an entity out there, they're going to say, oh, well, they got a buffet here. I'm going right in and I'm going to break this person down. When we do an investigation, we go out of our way to make sure that the client has everything possible to get control back of their house, to get the confidence to do it, and for them to be able to say, hey, you know what? This is my house. You will respect me. You know, I've respected you. You've taken over my house. You're frightening my family. You're scaring my kids. You are uprooting this whole house, and we've done nothing to you. So you have a choice. Either you can stay with us, work this out as a big family, but if you're going to be disrespectful and you're going to be just totally negative, then you have to go. It's your choice whether you want to stay here in this house, or either we'll get rid of you or we'll get somebody to get rid of you. You know, it's like, this is not your house anymore. We respect that you lived here, but now you have to respect that there are new owners. And they mean you no harm. I did a radio show this afternoon, and he said, well, how do you deal with getting rid of somebody and getting rid of something and getting its attention? And I said, I'm a mother. And when I do Mother Ellen voice, you listen to me, because I'm going to tell you, this is how it's going to be. Either you respect the family here or you have to go. Simple as that. Your choice.
That can like end like all of the stuff that's happening. Like just saying that.
Yeah. I mean, if you die suddenly, tragically, you don't know you're dead. For that realization to sink in is like, oh, okay. So that's why this is all different. That's why I'm saying, why are these people in my house? You have to work out an understanding and you have to be respectful. That's scary, you know, to realize, hey, I'm not on this plane anymore, but you seem like nice people in my house. I'm not going to bother them. They don't bother me. We'll work it out.
And that's just one scenario. I mean, there's other things too, other types of cases. We just had one where what was going on there is the woman didn't really have a belief system. So, or she felt she did, but she was said she was Wiccan, but she would mix her Wiccan with her family's Catholic background. So she would use different Wiccan spells and different things like that, positive things, not negative things, but she would mix it by praying to Jesus or praying. And then sometimes she'd pray to the gods and goddesses of the Wiccan thing. Well, you can't do that. It causes chaos, right? It creates just a clash between those two belief systems. And then she had a friend coming in telling her, oh yeah, you have this in your house, which God knows if she really did or not, right? I mean, you had a demon in your house, and she said she got rid of it doing other things, which creates more chaos. So we got one in there. There really wasn't a spirit there per se, but there was all this crazy energy. We talked to her about focusing on one type of religion you want to focus on, something that you're comfortable with, that your family is also comfortable with, because she's married, she had kids, something you can all do together as long as it's positive, but stick to that, go with that. Talk amongst you and your husband, talk which side you want to follow, because he really wasn't following anything either. So you have to get rid of that and calm that energy down. So sometimes just talking to that person, and by doing that, can change the energy that's just in hell. That's just energy, like we all give off energy, right? And so you can just sometimes change that and it calms everything down in the house. house. There may not be a spirit there. You have other cases where people bring things in. We've actually had people who decided they were going to use a Ouija board and ask for whatever to come, and it does. Things come. You don't know what's coming through.
Yeah.
Once you believe you're doing that, you're trying to talk to a spirit, anything can come through that communication. You're opening up that communication channel that anything can come to. Once spirit seems to understand that you're trying to talk to them, we don't know if there's a limit on distance either. Okay, we really don't know. So they could come from the house next door, or the graveyard next door, or a mile down the road. We don't know, right? But they do end up bringing something in. And because they tried to communicate with it, it wants to keep trying to communicate. And sometimes these things can be desperate, just like, you know, it's a person. So just like some people can be desperate for help, maybe it's desperate for help. And that's what we got to try to, as investigators, try to sort out. Once you do make communication, who is this spirit? You can't always tell exactly who it is, like a name or something like that, but you can get an idea of what their story is, or why they're trying to communicate with this family. And sometimes in a very negative way. Again, if you think it's like a person who's desperate, a desperate person, like I always like to use a drowning person analogy. If you go out to see a person drowning, you're trying to help them. What are they going to do? They're going to pull you. They're going to scratch you. They're going to drag. They may drag you down with them because they're panicked, right? They're desperate. And that can be the same way with spirit too. They can be desperate to get your attention. And then that's a different way to deal with that spirit in that particular way. Sometimes you end up helping the spirit to kind of move along and get it back out of there after it was brought in. So there's different things that can happen, different things that you can do.
So why did you guys become paranormal investigators? Did you guys like always believe in ghosts and spirits and like the afterlife type of thing?
I did. I mean, I kind of grew up that way. I mean, my mother had abilities, you could say. She had some psychic abilities. She didn't tout them or talk about them much except to me because I had an interest in that. And my sister, she would talk to her about it too, just because we had an interest. But she would always like tell you, be careful out there today. Something might happen today. What she didn't know is she had a premonition. Like I had a car accident one, and she didn't tell me till pretty much after the fact. She goes, well, I had this dream that you were going to get in an accident with your car. So nobody got hurt, smashed my car up pretty good. But I was like, geez, she could have told me that, Mom. I probably would have not gone out that day. But, you know, things like that. I mean, so I've had a belief all my life. I am Roman Catholic, but we used to talk about it in my home. My parents are Roman Catholic, but we used to talk about all this spirituality stuff in my home. So I always had an interest, yeah. And then I met this lady many years down the line, but So and then she had already started Spirits of New England when I came along, and we got to know each other. We met at an event, and then she asked me to be part of the team. And then I'll let Ellen tell about her side of the story.
I was a very quiet 17-year-old kid that loved horror movies, anything spooky, and you know, I was fine with that. I never had any paranormal experiences, nothing that I questioned. It was just, you know, entertainment, watching TV and everything. And then I lost my brother in Vietnam, and all the crazy things that happened the actual day that he died, because we didn't find out to the next day when the army came to the house. And by then we knew he was gone just by all the craziness that happened. So when the army came to the door with hologram, we were like, yeah, okay, we know, come on in. And he was like, what? And he said, we know. He came across half of the world to let us know that he was gone. I'd need like a 3-hour show to tell you all the crazy things that happened that I could not explain, did not understand. You know, I was just a kid, and he just tried to prepare us that he was gone. And at that time, I had no one to talk to, so I kept it all inside me. 50 years, I kept it inside me. Couldn't talk to my parents, didn't talk to grief counselors, and I didn't know where to go with my grief and my anger and my absolute sorrow. And Ghost Hunters came on, and I watched the show, and I said, oh my God, they get it. They understand. This is the road I need to be going down. And I went to a convention that they were at, and I got to talk to both Jason and Grant and briefly tell them what was going on and what had happened. And they said, let's talk. They understood and they validated that I wasn't crazy, that, yeah, something incredibly profound happened with my brother to prepare us that he was gone. And I said, this is what I want to do. I want to do paranormal investigations. I want to be a paranormal investigator. I don't want to be a ghost hunter and just go to places just to say, oh yeah, I went there. Big deal. So I have thousands of other people. I want to help people. people. I want to reach out to people that are going through what I went through. When you're afraid to talk to other people because they're going to say, oh, come on, be serious. Ghosts don't exist. You know, this doesn't exist. That didn't happen. Did it ever happen to you? No. So you can't say anything because it's not, you have no idea what I've gone through and you have no idea what other people go through and the ridicule. You don't want to talk about it. You don't want to say, hey, Jack, I think I had something weird happen in my house last night. And Jack's either going to say, really, tell me about it. Or he's going to be like, oh, come on. What were you drinking? What, you know, it's more acceptable now for people to stop and listen to you. Whereas before, people didn't want to admit that, yeah, there's something out there. There truly is. And I wanted us to help people that have no control over what's going in their house, no control over what's going on in their lives, and they have no one to talk to about it. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want us to give people the confidence and the control to get their lives back and get their families back, feel safe in their own home. And there's not a lot of groups that do what we do. There are people that just, they don't want to do a residential. They don't want to get involved with the family. They don't want to get involved with the drama. We've been together for 11 years. We still keep in touch with people. They know that they can always talk to us. It's not like, okay, we're out of here. See you. Bye. And that's it. You got to follow through. You got to make sure these people are okay. You got to make sure that they are confident and they are happy and safe in their own home. That's what our team is about, helping people.
I think it's a very noble mission because you're right. A lot of people would think you're like nuts if you're... Because I feel like, yeah. Okay, so my whole family believes in it. Like, I've always been interested in, like, ghost adventures, ghost hunters. You know, I used to watch A Haunting when I was, like, 8. These were the things I used to watch all the time. It's just, like, crazy because you would get a lot of backlash from, like, skeptics and stuff. But it's, like, if you think about it, like, the universe is so big. You really don't think there's, like, other dimensions to this. There's, like, other planes living in here. Like, it's physics, right? So, it's, like, out of what we can see, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to imagine that there is a place that these spirits are like, hey, you can't see me, but I need to communicate with you. I need to reach out to you. I need to warn you about this. I need to protect you. I need to reach you. To be able to talk to somebody about that without them thinking that you're insane. And it's like, if you've never had a paranormal experience, you don't know how that tears at you because you're dealing with something that sometimes you can't see. Sometimes you can't hear. You can just feel it. You don't know what it is. You don't know what caused it. You don't know how to get rid of it or to help you. So you don't say anything. And that eats at you because there's something there.
And I'm glad you brought up the science stuff too, because there actually is quantum physicists who are actually very interested in the paranormal because they feel it can help prove some of their theories. So I actually know one guy who does that. He's actually into the paranormal and they're collecting information. They're collecting data and things like that in order to try to see if it fits into their theories to help prove some of their theories of things we just don't understand yet, right? Other planes of existence, other like fourth dimension type of things, stuff like that, that we're just not totally aware of yet. So I'm glad you brought that up about the science part of it. It is being looked at.
There's so much out there that we know we can help with, but there's a whole realm out there that we don't know yet. I've been asked, well, how long are you going to keep investigating? And I said, all right, I'm a sexy senior citizen now. And when I stop, come on, say yes, Ellen. You never stop learning. You can't say, oh, yeah, we've been a team for 11 years. We know everything. No, we don't. We just scratched the surface and we've been so fortunate with the cases that we've had. Even if you don't find anything, you learn something. Right. Oh, well, let me try this. Let me think outside the box. Let's try it this way.
So you guys have found something then? Like you found actual evidence of things happening?
We believe so. Yeah. I mean, everything is subjective, but we've caught stuff and we've presented that as evidence to different, to our clients, but we do lectures and things like that. And we've presented that stuff as evidence. We've also presented things that we, during the course of investigation, we found out wasn't evidence. We maybe thought it was until we dug, of course, we dig a little deeper and we found out it wasn't. So I'll present that during lectures and people go, oh yeah, that's two spirits in this. It's like, no, it's not. It was just the way the lighting was and the shadowing, it made it look like there's two beings looking through this doorway at you, but it's not. It's cleaning products on a shelf. So we do present that too. Like when you debunk things and you can prove it's not, we present that to make people understand that you don't just present anything as evidence. You have to go to a long length, the extra step to be sure yourself whether it is or not. And if you happen to see this, you probably would think the same thing until that reveal. And no, it's not. It's this. And we found that out because we talked to the person at the library there and we had him take photos of that particular doorway, and turns out it's cleaning product. So there's an apparition right there.
Wait, so what was your like most concrete evidence that's like where you were like, whoa, that's like, okay, you can't deny this type of thing?
Well, you can deny any skeptic will deny it. But within the community, I think some of the best stuff we got was EVPs, a boy's voice on the USS Constitution, video of shadow figures at the, was a Fairbanks house in Dedham, Massachusetts. That's just a couple things. But we caught a lot of things on the USS Constitution. We have stuff that's on our websites, richmond.org, that you can look at and view or listen to if they're EVPs. And that's the evidence that we put out there, what we've captured, at least some of it.
And we all have to agree on the evidence, otherwise we don't present it. Because if there's any doubt, then anybody has been, anybody could say, oh, well, you did this and you did that. No, we didn't. We use the same equipment that the FBI uses for voice recognition, stuff like that. We don't play.
Yeah, there's a program I use for that so we can define whether it was one of our people talking or if there was somebody else talking who's you couldn't see in the room. Let's put it that way. Because we usually have no more than two people in a room investigating at a time. So that just keeps, like, makes it easier to determine what is evidence, what isn't evidence. But, you know, if I need to, I'll use that voice recognition program. And we have used it at times. And we found that, well, it wasn't either one of the investigators who was talking to them. Right? So there's only two people in that room and somebody else is responding. So who's that? But we've had a lot of things that, at least to us and to other people we presented it to, is actual evidence of something paranormal, something that wasn't any of our investigating. And we go to great lengths, again, to try to disprove what we captured or try to debunk what I guess was worth.
What we presented to the captain of the Constitution almost made him fall off his chair, but it confirmed the stories that he had heard. He wanted to know, is this ship haunted? You know, he said, you know, guests that come to visit, crew members all have personal experiences. And he looked me right in the eyes and said, is this ship haunted? And I daintily and professionally said, oh, hell yeah. But I said, not only is it haunted, I said, it is protected. You've got 308 people that died on this ship, and that was the only life that they knew. And there were quite a few of them that helped us those two nights. And they did stuff like, hey, don't forget this. Hey, listen to this. Listen to that. And we'd be like, where is this coming from? That's because they were trying to get our attention to say, here you go. Here's something for you. Listen to this. Even if I never did another investigation after the Constitution, I said, what we caught there, I am so honored that the sailors that are still on that ship respected us enough to be included in our investigation.
And it was enough to convince the captain of that ship at the time that in the Navy that their ship is haunted. What we captured there, what we presented to them. Because a lot of it made sense to them of things that would normally commands, different things like that, that would be responses to commands on the ship that it just, you know, they accepted it and they believe their ship is haunted because of the evidence we presented to them.
Do you guys still get like scared when you guys are investigating, or are you guys like kind of desensitized now?
Yeah, I guess desensitized is a good word for it. After all these years.
Yeah, it's like, all right, guys, it's just Jack and I, you know, just coming to check you out. We did the USS Salem a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, we've been on the ship before, and we're always respectful. There are teams that are bullies, and they get lousy evidence because they're bullies, and they're disrespectful. We're like, hey, how you doing? It's us again, and we don't want to stress them out. I don't want them to stress us out. I was not feeling well that night. Plus, it was over 100 degrees on the ship, which didn't help. And three different people on three different devices in three different locations got my name yelled out as like, okay, is that somebody we know? Is it my brother? And one of the people I didn't even know. And they're like, you're Ellen? And I said, yeah. He says, well, your name got shouted out on my plasma box. And I go, like, God, okay. I didn't do it. I didn't steal it. You know. So I'd like to think that they felt comfortable seeing old friends back on the ship to bring other people that were on the ship that had never been on an investigation, and they all had their own personal experiences.
And the other end of that, when you're helping people, when you're doing residential cases, you're in the thought process of trying to help them, trying to figure out what, help them figure out what's going on. So when something happens, you don't immediately assume it's something paranormal. You start to look for, okay, what caused that? You're in a completely different mindset. It's not about, oh, you're in a known haunted location. You're looking to get scared. Like some people do, they go out to get that excitement, that adrenaline rush. But when you're helping people and you're not even thinking that way. Just thinking about trying to help them, trying to find out what's really going on. And when something does happen, usually you'll run towards it rather than run away from it. I had a shadow figure at one location, completely lit room, is in a basement. Basement was lit. There's a doorway into another section of basement. That's all lit because we were just getting ready to set up equipment. I go down, I see this shadow figure peeking around a doorway, and I ran right at it saying,
did it run away?
And it took, and it just disappeared. It disappeared behind the doorway in a blur. And it's like, but so that's your thought is like, what is that? I got to go find out what that is. You're not scared of it. You just don't think that way. I mean, there's been times when I have felt that energy that you like, I need to get out of this room. I always say it's like walking into the bar and you all of a sudden you can sense there's a lot of tension there. Like a fight's got to break out or something. You think you need to leave, but actually that's when we stay. We get that kind of feeling like you shouldn't be here. That's when you stay, because the reason you stay is you're there to try to collect any evidence. And usually when you get that feeling, something's about to happen. So you want to be there for it, whether it ends up being a disembodied voice that you hear, or you capture an EVP, or a shadow figure.
Remember the humming coming down the stairs? We're sitting there and you hear,
there's nobody coming down the stairs.
And we're like, oh my God, there's nobody coming down the stairs. None of us hum. Who was that? What was that? That was a creepy house. That was a very creepy house.
You don't run, or you don't, because you're not thinking that way. You're like, okay, where's that coming from? And you go look to see what it is.
If somebody's chasing me with an axe, then maybe I'll run out.
Yeah, right. I'm more afraid of the living than the dead anyway. So, yeah. You know.
But other than that, I didn't drive 2 hours to turn around and run out of a client's house.
Okay, going to the creepy house that you're talking about, was that what you would consider your scariest experience or no?
No, it was interesting. It was an interesting house to me, not so much creepy, as we experienced everything the client said he had experienced. That's the only case I could say that we actually experienced everything he did, even being touched, scratching on a ceiling, everything. And we could find no reason for the scratches, no rats, animals, nothing like that. It's a very clean house, very, very, very well kept house. So, and we did look too. We looked for all that stuff. Scariest thing I ever had, it wasn't with our team, but it was with some other friends of mine who have a team. They were out in San Diego, California, and I was on the Star of India with them. And they wanted to try to investigate and do some filming and stuff like that. So I was filming for them, really. And they were reaching out to a woman who had been murdered on that ship.
Oh.
And we think we actually made contact with the murderer because there was this heavy walking back and forth on the deck above us. And there's nobody out there. Three of us are on the ship. That's it. You're locked on that ship. And you hear this stomping back, like it's angry. And you could feel that negativity, that anger. And that went on for like 20 minutes. And we even went out and went up to look. And there's nobody up there. That was the only time I think I was frightened, really, because we thought maybe somebody did get on the ship. And the Maritime Museum is not in the best area of San Diego. So you don't know who maybe got on. But even when you find out it's like nobody else is here, that energy that was giving off was like, get out of here, get off this ship. And you didn't leave. Well, you couldn't anyway. You're locked on, so you really can't get off. That's the only time I could say I felt kind of afraid of that. But I had a good friend of mine in there, psychic medium, and she knew how to do protection to keep that energy away and change the energy to shift so that thing couldn't really connect to us or become an attachment to us. So it's good to have people with you that are well-versed in different types of things, especially somebody like that who's that type of psychic medium. Ellen, what about you?
I'd have to say Darlene's house was one of the first investigations. It was a person that worked at the hospital that contacted us because the hospital had done an article on us. And, you know, she told me about the things that were going on in the house. And I was like, yeah, you know, we'll come down there. And the running joke with me on the team is that I have no psychic abilities. I'm like the dead one on the team. I don't see anything. I don't feel anything. I don't hear anything, you know. And I think that's because I'm always in protective mode, you know, making sure everybody's okay, ready to do battle with whatever's messing with the client. And we're standing in the doorway of the client's bedroom. I was at the back in the doorway, and we're listening to a psychic medium that we brought down there, very rare time that we've used one. And she walked in, she said, this house is a mess. There's a lot of stuff going on in this house. And she was talking about an Indian woman that she felt was murdered on the property, which, you know, is an Indian burial ground from the Mi'kmaq Indians down there. And she said, I feel that this woman is trying to protect your client. And I said, oh, all right, okay. So I'm standing there and I'm listening to her, and I'm leaning against the doorway. And all of a sudden I get this.
Like a hand on your shoulder.
A cupped hand on my shoulder, enough to make me turn around to acknowledge who I thought were my friends, Lynn and Dorothy, who were still down the other end of the hall. There was nobody there. And this was enough to make me turn around. And it wasn't like a little doot. It was a cupped hand. So immediately I'm going, okay, is it the hood of my sweatshirt? Am I too close to the door? Am I up against the bureau? You know, I'm immediately trying to debunk it because something just touched me. Something just really touched me to get my attention. And I was like, oh my God, I've never had anything like that happen. And what I tried to say and what came out were two totally different things. I wanted to say, do you feel that this Indian woman is here in the property? And it came out as, you know, and they're like, what? And she said, okay, you and me out in the hall. And she said, what happened to you? And I said, I don't know. And I put my hand on her shoulder and I said, that's what I just got. And she said, let me tell you, she said, that woman is here and she knows that you're here helping the client. And she said, I just found out like 5 minutes ago that your client is being beaten by her husband.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And her saying this, I feel that she is in great danger. And I feel that this Indian woman was killed on this property and she is trying to help her client. So if she reached through and patted you on the shoulder, she said, that is the ultimate compliment because she knows you're here to help her. And I said, couldn't she just write me a note someday? You know, I said, oh my God. I mean, I'll never get over that. How can something that has no physical body do that enough to make me turn around to acknowledge it? Do I feel honored? Because we did help the client very much. In fact, to the point when I ran into her, maybe 3 months after the investigation, I saw her coming down the hall in the hospital. She went, Ellen! How are you? Comes up, gives me a big hug. And I'm like, who the hell is this? And I'm looking at her and I was like, oh my God. She looked like she'd had a total makeover, no stress, relaxed. And she said, I can never thank your team enough for what they did in that house. And their whole area was all condos, but it's on Indian land and it's right by the Hockomock Swamp. And God only knows what happened there. And there was so much activity in that house. I mean, I wasn't afraid. I was startled as hell. I was like, you know, you question and question and question. Is how can that happen? How did that happen? That case I'll never forget.
So she left her husband then, I'm assuming.
Yeah, she was actually in the process of divorce.
Yeah, but she never told
us. No, she didn't tell us
that was going on. And it wasn't, you know, she had to kind of feel us out and get confident. And she and Becca just hit it right off. And I guess she was just so overwhelmed that we were there that she said, listen, this is what's going on. I haven't told the team yet, but she said, I'm going to tell you and I'll tell them later. So when you can look back on a case and say, we made a difference in that person's life, you know, that's a great feeling.
Well, are you guys ever scared of things following you back home? Like, do you guys have like preventative measures or something like that?
Depending on the case And we just do prayer. I actually envision a bright light surrounding me, the light of my faith surrounding me and pushing all that negativity away. We also can do saging with white sage or Palo Santo, things like that, to push that negative energy away from you. But a lot of it's like just keeping a strong mind and a strong will. I mean, if you're a strong-willed individual, these things really won't attach to you anyway. I mean, I have had some things attached to me from cases, but I can tell when that happens. It's more like you feel constantly drained after. If it goes on for more than like 2 days, I've probably got an attachment. So I have a friend of mine I call that can clear that for me, cleanse that for me. So if I can't do it myself, because sometimes you can't do it yourself, but that's rare. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. Of course, the more negative cases you do, the chances are you might. I mean, I even recently, through my own stuff I do with Carly and stuff, we did an actual demonic case. And that you take a lot more precautions then, because we were actually dealing with somebody who was possessed. Now, Ellen wasn't involved with this case, but I have a friend of mine who's an exorcist. They call him spiritual warriors these days, but he studied all that and he's an ordained minister. And he went into the exorcism and five of us were there with him to assist. But yeah, that you're doing a lot more prayer. You're connecting with your faith and you're hanging on to that. And that protects you. Even that's, people say, well, weren't you terrified? No, I really wasn't terrified by any of it. And we actually physically watched this person change right at towards the end when the demon was finally expelled. The woman's face changed, her neck extended out, her stomach extended out. And then once it was gone, she went completely back to normal. That it only lasts for like 10, 15 seconds, but you watch it happen. You're standing here watching, count to 15. That's actually a pretty long time. And then it just, boom, goes back to the person. And you're more frightened for them than you are for yourself, because you're really worried about if you can't get rid of this thing, it's going to end up destroying this person physically, right? This person will probably end up taking their own life, which is what it wants them to do. But just the torment they go through their entire life, like this woman told us about for her and her daughter. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you think you got bad luck sometimes. This is beyond bad. These people go through hell, rapes and everything else, almost constant. And that's because this thing draws that in. But to watch the exorcism and be part of that, you do risk that thing coming for you. But that's why I say you have to be strong in your faith and your belief, and that keeps things away from you.
How'd you feel afterwards? Were you peaceful or?
We were pretty exhausted for about a week, but that just had to do with the energy we put into it, the prayer and everything else. You're putting everything you have into praying for that person and focusing on the ritual and helping and assisting with that. And, you know, sometimes it gets physical. I mean, not for me, it didn't, but we had two guys there who were police officers that had to hold this because it was a daughter and a mother. And you got a 15-year-old girl that two cops can barely hold down, and her mother's trying to hold her down at that time, too. You know you're not dealing with something human. I mean, there's a lot involved there, but it is draining physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So yeah, it takes a little while to recover from that. You don't do those all the time, thank God, because they're very few and far between. You know, you may deal with demonic case that's an oppression. That's not a possession. That's oppression is easier because this thing is not part of them yet. It's just, we're trying to wear them down in a different way. It's around them, but it's not possessing. Once it's in there, it's very difficult to get rid of. And that was a 13-hour day with follow-up after, just to make sure everything was good. And then Carly and I stayed that night after the exorcism because we had started the case ourselves, trying to help and trying to figure out what was going on. And we stayed till about 3 a.m. after the exorcisms were completed. And that was another 5 hours after. So we stayed awake that whole time. It finally left at 3 in the morning. So it was a long day.
I bet demonic possessions, it's a lot of work. It's a whole different energy, right?
It is. It's a whole completely different thing. You're not dealing with just a human spirit that may be negative or something like that. You're dealing with something that took possession of this individual, and they're not willing to give it up. You know, they're not going to go easily. And it takes hours and hours and hours of doing this. Sometimes it can take days or weeks. We got lucky it took 13 hours and not 13 days. And we've been in touch with them since. And, you know, she still keeps in touch with us. They're still going to church and they've reconnected with their faith and stuff like that. So they're staying on the right path as best they can. And they have to, because it'll just come back. It knows when somebody's a weak link. And we did find out what brought it on. Originally, yeah, the woman had committed suicide when she was 17 after being raped. She died. And she says she went to hell. And she described what hell really is, which is the absence of everything. It's just pitch blackness. right? You're disconnected from everything, and all you hear is the screams of the tormented. Now, that's actually been described to priests and exorcists by the demons. That's how the demons describe it. Well, she just said she kept praying for God to save her, and the problem is God can't hear you in hell. You're disconnected from God. So, and the doctors couldn't explain how she came back. She was dead. They'd given up, and all of a sudden her heart started beating. And I said, well, it's very likely it wasn't God that brought you back. It was a demon, because demons want out of hell too. So, and then it stayed with her the rest of her life.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, this is how these things happen. I mean, either believe or you don't believe. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And I believe. But when you see somebody go through this, and you watch these things happen, and you see somebody physically change in front of them, in front of five, you know, six of you, actually, Steve there too, and Carly saw it. And there's more than just that. I mean, there's a lot of things that happened to bring you to the conclusion that this person is demonically possessed. It's how they react to certain prayer and certain things. And she was Christian. She was Roman Catholic herself. You know, some people would say, well, she just believed it. So, you know, it's kind of in her mind. And she, you don't, somebody can't physically change what I saw.
Yeah, for sure. So what is like your process for investigation? So you have people fill out this form and then you read it and then like you guys research the place after, or what happens after?
I like to get in touch with the town historian, try to find out as much as we can about the land, what's nearby, what is it built on? Is there anything that we read on the form that we go, whoa, okay, that's not cool. It just happened a couple of times, you know, we have to question that. And we go to the house and we usually call the people and talk to them. When a person looks at your website and looks at everything and says, I like these people, I trust these people, I would welcome them into my house. You can't get a bigger compliment than that. So when you make sure that we've made that connection, that we're open communication, whatever it is, you can talk to us about it. Even if you haven't told your wife or your husband, you can talk to us about it. Something that's bothering you, something you're afraid of, let's work on it. Let's see what we can do to give you back control of your house. And, you know, we do the investigations, and it's a lot of time and work to go over the evidence, go over the filming. Easier now than when we started out. You know, you have cameras set up everywhere, and it was just mind-boggling. With the equipment that they're making now, it's so much easier and clearer. I mean, there's actually equipment that I can handle. I'm like, Jack, how do you turn this on? Everybody's got their strong points. Jack is amazing with all the tech stuff. And one of the many things I love about Jack is he thinks outside the box. He doesn't just go, oh, okay, this is this. What about that is that? What about all this? What if that happened? What about over there? What about over here? It's good not to box yourself in, because there is so much involved in the paranormal world, that it's okay to say, well, let's try this. Have we thought about doing that? And we get great results. To me, every investigation we go on, whether it's nothing or something incredible, it's an honor. It's an honor to be in somebody's house that they trusted you. And you're like, you know what? We can help these guys. We can really do this. I could not be prouder of our team. When I think of what are all the things that happened for Jack and I to meet and to just instantly connect, feathers and all. That's another story. Jack's a brother to me. He really is. And I just feel so blessed that we were guided on this journey.
We've done a lot of stuff. So
yeah, I mean, we really have done some amazing stuff, and we've helped a tremendous amount of people. And Jack's on a lot of TV shows and talks about our cases, and only took him 3 years to get me on TV. So I was like, I don't want to, you know, they're sick of me. You need to talk about these cases. And I was like, you know what? You're right. You're not doing this. You know, I'm not going to win an Oscar or an Emmy or anything. We're talking about our cases. We are sharing our cases with you. We tell the producers, we're not making crap up. Don't put demonic in there. We are going to tell our story the way it happened. And if you're going to change it to make it entertainment.
Well, they do, but it's only to a certain point. I always tell people, you know, TV is about entertainment. That's really what it's about. But you can get your true stories across, and you can get your actual evidence across. And they do show that and share that. And you can actually even teach people something. As long as you work together with the producers and these shows and stuff, if you let them know where you stand right from the get-go, right from the start, let them know you're not going to just tell them what they want to hear and tell them what your goal is too, they will work with you, and you can tell the stories ways, they can make it entertaining on their end, but you can get the truth out there and teach people something in the process too.
What tools do you guys use to ghost hunt?
Flashlight, and I'm good to go.
I mean, we do use flashlights. There is one technique where you can use, it's called the flashlight technique, to try to get communication with spirit, where you can tell them that you turn it so it's just barely off, and you can tell them to turn it on. I actually have more recently just turned flashlights on and told them to turn it off, and it's happened. Because that's more positive, because if flashlight's on, it's on, right? It's like you do. If something turns it off, what's turning it off? Those are brand new batteries we use every time we go out. So, and I have had that happen where something would shut it off, and the flashlight's just on. So it's draining the energy from it. We use like EMF meters. K2 is an EMF type meter. There's other EMF meters. A lot of this stuff I actually use in the work I do with the Department of Defense. And we use different things to check on electronics and stuff like that. I guess that's maybe where my real advantage comes in, because I know everything this stuff was really designed to do, what it was designed for, and how we're using it in the paranormal field, and how it can work for what you're trying to do in the paranormal field, just because of what it was designed to do, right? Or designed for. Thermal imagers, audio recorders, pretty straightforward. Infrared cameras.
Ghost radar.
Yeah, well, I use a ghost radar device. It's an app that's on the phone. Mm-hmm. That's not something we use at work, but I did use it for 7 years just to try it out without reporting it any evidence from it. Because everybody thinks apps are no good, they're junk, they're just made for entertainment. Well, pretty much all the equipment that's made for paranormal investigating has a caveat, entertainment purposes only. But when you actually use it and you're catching EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, on audio recorder, and you get a word that comes through the ghost radar just at about the same time, and it means basically the same thing or says the same thing, what are the chances of that? You know, or you get a female voice through the recorder and you say, Here's an instance of what was happening. Let me do it this way. I had the ghost radar going at this one location, and I asked, "Are you a woman?" And it said a name, a female name. I said, "Oh, is that your name?" And after review, after the fact of the investigation, going through the audio recorder, I come to that point, and in the recorder, it's a female voice saying yes. So she said her name through the ghost radar device, which I think was, let's say it was Helen or something like that. I just don't remember right off the top of my head. And then I asked the question, "Was that your name?" And in the recorder, it's a female voice saying yes. That's pretty good evidence that that thing is working, that other ghost radar device is working. And that was just one instance. I had many other instances with other things. So now I do use it as a regular part of my investigation kit. We also use divining rods, things like that, kind of old school stuff. They do work. You can feel energy really well through them, especially the copper rods with the copper handles, because it's a conductor. Copper is a conductor. So you're holding that and you can feel the type of energy that's coming through it. It'll give you answers. I mean, you can ask questions and supposedly give you answers, but you can tell the energy that's coming through that. And you could also use it to find things with. Truth is, today the roads and grounds guys, the road guys who work on your roads, still use them today to find the pipelines underneath the road when the documents they have won't show them where they are, right? They're outdated or they're not up to date. They can find those lines. I actually taught a guy out here how to do it that was outside and they were looking for a gas line and he's using divining rods. And he goes, "I don't even know if these really work." So I told him, I said, "Well, I knew where the line was. I knew where the line was. I could have told him." I said, "Well, keep walking up this way. Are they crossed?" "Yeah." He's while I'm watching. "Okay, they're crossed." Then he sees them uncrossed. I said, "Okay, you passed it. Back up." He backs up. Cross. I said, "Turn to your right." Turns to his right, and they open up for a second. Then they cross again. I said, "Keep walking forward." And as he kept walking, he'd wander off. They'd open up, and I said, "Nope, come back to your left or your right," and then come back again. And he found the pipeline. I said, "Well, as he got to the other side, there was an old marker there in paint that was fading." He looks down and goes, "That's the marker." I said, "Yeah, I know." So he found out they actually work. So you can use divining rods do work, and other techniques too. But we use, like I said, infrared cameras, K2 meters.
Tell her about the SLS will give you camera.
Yeah, go ahead.
You tell her.
Oh, well, the SLS camera is something new now. I'm still even just kind of experimenting with that myself. But the SLS camera, it was designed for the Xbox, shows that skeleton figure. Yeah, it was the Xbox thing that's designed that, you know, for the motion stuff, like when you were doing the Xbox. Yeah. So that's what they use. They attach it to a tablet to view on. And then you have the program you run to view it. So they use those to try to look for these stick figures that might appear out of nowhere. There are some things I have found that can make it look like a stick figure, even though there's not, you know, something that looks human shaped and it'll give you that shape, but it's not a ghost, right? There is times though when something appears on them and there's should be nothing. It's a blank wall behind it. So you shouldn't get a stick figure. It shouldn't show a human figure. And sometimes those things will respond to you as you ask them, can you raise your right arm? And it'll raise its right arm and things like that. So they can be useful, but you got to be careful with them at the same time too.
Okay. Yeah. What advice do you have for people who want to try to go ghost hunting?
I would say if you've never done it before, either go to one of these events where they're doing a ghost hunt, and they usually always have people like ourselves there, people who are more knowledgeable, or some of the guys you've seen on TV, stuff like that. But when you go, don't just watch what they're doing. Ask questions. Be interactive with it. I mean, and just learn from them. They bring equipment a lot of times. You don't have to bring any. But I will say this. If you have a cell phone, you've got a digital recorder on it. You've got a camera on it. Two of the most important things you need is if you want to investigate. So anybody who's got a smartphone or an iPhone or whatever, you've got everything you need right on there to just go to one of these ghost hunts and see if you can capture something. Learn from these people who are the experts, so to speak, but they have more knowledge than you do. You're starting out. These people have been doing it for a long time. Ask them questions if you have a real desire to do it. Learn that way. That's what we did. We went to these events with the ghost hunter guys, TAPS, and we learned from them and we asked a lot of questions. And then, you know, if you got a couple of friends that you want to try to begin a team with or make a team with, go to some of these known haunted locations to start, because there's always somebody there who's running them or who knows what's going on there and knows what they're doing. They're usually pretty safe locations to go to. You're not likely to walk away with an attachment of any kind. But I would say, if you're really serious about it, make sure you're grounded in something, in some kind of faith, in some kind of belief system, because it is a spiritual realm you're talking about. People say, oh, I'm going to go ghosting and go talk to the ghost. So what do you think a ghost is? Ghost is nothing more than a human soul. If you believe you have a soul, that's what we're talking. We're talking about the human soul, and these souls are still here on Earth for whatever reason, and you're talking to them. So be aware of that. It's a person, just doesn't have a body. So be respectful when you do these things, because you get what you get. If you're mean to somebody or you're rude to somebody, they're either going to ignore you or they're going to be rude or do something back to you. Right. Ask them questions like, what's important to you? I'm here to talk to you. I'd like to hear what you want to talk about. What's important to you? Start with things like that. Just don't ask the same canned questions. Think outside the box. And again, talk to investigators that have been doing this for a while. Learn from them. I also give a class, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I teach a class called Paranormal 101. I give it at a couple of local colleges in the fall. I'm doing it this year again. And people do that. I wrote a whole book. My book is a textbook for the course. It talks all about building a team, investigating, spiritual protection, things that covers pretty much the gambit of for a beginner.
Wait, what schools do you do? What schools do you teach?
Schools. Well, one is Hudson Valley Community College, just up above me. Mm-hmm. And the other is SUNY Schenectady down in Schenectady, New York.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's far away from me.
Yeah, they're far away. I am going to try to start bringing them on the road a little bit. I may even be doing something online. Online is a little bit tougher, though, because I do like to include like an investigation with it. Because you want to learn how to investigate, we bring the equipment, we let you use it, we teach you how to actually use it properly. But we are talking about doing something online. We're thinking about that still. And I am thinking about taking it to other states, other places. A little out of time. Probably once I retire, more than anything else. Yeah. It's only going to be about another year or two. So then I'll go into the ghost hunting full time.
For me, I would say, don't go alone. All you have to do, never investigate on your own. Who's going to help you if you fall or you crash into something? Be respectful. Do not break into homes and locations. You know, oh, I'm going ghost hunting. No, you're trespassing, and I hope you get arrested because you're being disrespectful. Like Jack said, go to lectures, go to events, learn from people that have been established in the paranormal for a long time, and don't go in there with an attitude all cocky. Oh, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to be in TV. No, you're not, because you're doing everything wrong. Either you're the type of person that wants to just go to locations, that's fine. Or you're the type of person that wants to get involved with families that are having problems. But learn and listen. Don't do it by yourself. Have an open heart. believe in what you're doing and be respectful. If you have an attitude, you're going to get knocked down by the instructors and by the paranormal, because they're not going to put up with it either. If you truly have that passion, learn everything you can. Get Jack's books. They're fantastic. And that, I'm not just saying that.
She's biased anyway.
Yeah, I know. I kind of like you. But they're so well done and they're not overwhelming. You know, you read them and you're like, oh, okay. You know, it's not like all this, you know, I'm a pseudo intellectual. But be respectful. The bottom line is have fun, because you can make a difference in somebody's life, or you can just do it as something fun to do. Have fun and be safe and listen to what us old folk tell you. We've been doing it for a long time. It's an amazing journey. It's an honor to do what we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, thank you.
Need Spirits of New England's help? Check out their website, spiritsofnewengland.org, and their Facebook page, Spirits of New England. A link of all of Jack Kenna's books will be put in the episode description.
Welcome to the What Even Is podcast, Spooktacular. For the month of October, we'll be talking about all things mystical, magical, and just plain misunderstood, and maybe even a little spooky. I'm your host.
Sorry, I had something in my throat. I'm your host, Donna Trung. Let's get started.